Welcome everyone to episode 427 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And this episode is dedicated to the late, great Ace Frehley. A day we knew that would be coming. I don't think any of us thought it would happen so quickly. Our remembrance of Ace next.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. Quick shout out to my patrons. Let's go. Newest to oldest, Sean Richmond, Tony Espen, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edstrom, Metal Dan, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Mark Striegel, Brad Dahl, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Stephen Hoker, and Stephen Saylor. Thank you all of you guys for your support. It's always fun to hang out with you guys, have you guys on the show, and our daily banter back and forth on Patreon regarding just different things that we're posting, from questions to polls to videos. Not sure where I'm talking in the third person. Different things that I'm posting. Find out more about Patreon. You can join for as little as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/signalsfrommars, or you can go to Signals from Mars to find all of the different places where you can follow the show, the audio version, the video version, or anything else related to Signals from Mars, including merch or other ways that you can support outside of Patreon. I know that not everyone likes that. There's PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, so on and so forth. What a 2025. We've lost so many people that have helped shape the soundtrack of our lives this year. So many people that have accompanied us throughout the years, through good times, through bad times. The song Hard Times has always been one of my favorite by Kiss. The hard times are dead and gone, but the hard times have made me strong, and the hard times have made me see that the hard times ain't where I want to be. Those lyrics have traveled with me since, what, 1980? Somewhere around there. 40 some odd years, almost 50 years. All I can say is thank you, Ace. Thank you for helping me throughout the years with your music, with your lyrics, the emotional connection that I've felt since I was 4 years old. We're going to get into all of that. Thank you, Ace. Let's celebrate Ace Frehley. now. Welcome one and all to the latest edition of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. Joining us are Mr. Yargmetal, Dr. Poison, Brad Dahl. And hopping on as the show is starting, Mr. Ed Ferguson. How are you guys?
Doing good. How are you?
Here we go.
Well, that's kind of a lie. Feeling pretty... Pretty sad about that. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got Edgar Winterson in the chat as well. And today's episode is remembering Ace Frehley, someone that has influenced all of us. Hey, we've got Tony Espin as well in the chat. Yeah, I've got my Creatures of the Night t-shirt on. And yes, I know that Ace did not play on Creatures, but I do think it is still an iconic cover. And it just dawned on me today a few things. Right behind you there. One thing is that half of that lineup is gone. Eric Carr and Ace. And that's actually the only cover. Or no, I guess Killers. Killers has Ace and Eric together in makeup. Mm. So, but Creatures and Killers are the only two places where Eric and Ace appear together on an official album cover.
Yeah, because the band's not on The Elder, are they?
Nope. They're not on The Elder. They were still using Peter Criss's image on Unmasked, even though Eric did that tour. So, rough day. I found out it was weird. I was going down various YouTube rabbit holes last night and I just didn't want to go to sleep for whatever reason. I kept thinking, you need to go to sleep by this time. You need X amount of hours. I passed up on an interview yesterday because they wanted me to do the interview at midnight. And I said, no, I got to get to bed like an hour before that. I'm sitting on the couch well past midnight. And I get into bed. And my usual, I'm looking at Instagram and I'm looking at Mark Striegel's stories. And I see an image of Ace, Rolling Stone, and it says Ace Frehley, 1940, whatever, to 2025. I'm like, wait, what? And so I instantly go to Google, and it says right away that he had passed away. and it said, you know, that he had fallen in his studio a few weeks ago, which led to a brain bleed. And from what I learned this morning, his family decided to take him off of life support because they had said the odds of him surviving were really bad. So the family, instead of kind of drawing it out, decided to just take this step. I'm glad I'm not in their shoes. I hope that's not a decision that I ever have to make with anyone, you know?
Me too.
It's that can't be easy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I fell asleep, got up today instantly when I, you know, was getting ready to take my kids to school. I put on an Ace Frehley playlist that I'd made this summer, which was just his solo material. And I went through that quickly this afternoon. I started listening to Kiss, but I left my kids at school and it started to kind of set in. And it was weird because, you know, when Ozzy had passed away this summer, all the shows were pre-recorded and, you know, I was in upstate New York and similar to now, I was dealing with a bad back, but I was in a lot of pain and I was like, okay, I'll mourn Ozzy by just listening to Ozzy and Sabbath for the That's what I did. I listened to nothing but Ozzy and Sabbath for like 2 weeks straight. And I think I felt the loss of Ozzy this morning more than I did when it happened because of that. You know, I started putting together how both Ozzy and Ace were now gone and how both of them have accompanied me through such a long time of my life. There's a reason why I have this image of Ace behind me. This is from The Inside of Alive 2. That book that comes with it, The Evolution of Kiss or whatever the name of it is. I saw that image when I was 4 years old. My brother had Alive 2 and he had Destroyer. These are the same copies. I inherited these from him. So these have been around in our household since 1977. And I realized that, you know, Ace was the catalyst, the beginning of the soundtrack to my life. Mm-hmm. You know, that image got me into music and was like was the beginning to point to this whole musical journey. And for better or worse, their music has been with me, you know, through good times, through bad times, through moments where I've needed to pick me up. And I've turned to music by Ace, by Ozzy, by others that have passed away this year, you know, others that have passed away these last few years. And I mean, I don't want to diminish the loss of like Dio or Lemmy or people like that, or even Eric Carr or, you know, even Freddie Mercury. Thinking back, and I remember when Steve Clark died, I was devastated. You know, it was the first time that I could kind of interpret somebody who I looked up to passing away. And then shortly thereafter, Eric Carr and Freddie Mercury died the same day. And I remember I was in high school and I was a mess. You know, I remember I was bawling my eyes out before school. I'm like, my world is over. A member of Kiss is gone. A member of Queen is gone. You know, I wasn't used to any of that stuff. So, you know, being older, stuff hits you a different way, but it's still, you know, I got pretty emotional this morning when all of this information just started coming in and I started taking everything in and processing it.
Yeah. What year were you born, Victor?
73.
So All right. So when you were four, it was right at the height of their popularity.
Yep.
So yeah, that was perfect time for you to discover him. And that's the same time that I discovered him too. I was just more like 7 or 8.
Okay.
But that, yeah. And the same for me. It's just that is what awakened me to rock music
right.
the most, I think. You know, I wasn't really paying attention to music. I was, you know, in my own world with my imagination as a kid. But
right.
when I heard Kiss, which was Kiss Alive 2 for the first time, yeah, that woke me up and started my musical journey.
Yeah, I remember hearing Alive 2, remember hearing Destroyer. The first song that I can pinpoint and say, okay, they're speaking to me. This is what I love. This was Flaming mm-hmm. Youth on Destroyer. Flaming Youth, mm-hmm. you know, Flaming Youth, You Set the World on Fire. I was like, that's me. I want to set the world on fire. You know, I want to do something. I want to make a difference. I want to stand out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we would listen to Alive 2 and Destroyer back to back all the time, to the point where I'm sure I was annoying the hell out of my brother.
Yeah.
You know, he was moving on from Kiss shortly thereafter, you know, because he was getting into and at the same time, as a byproduct, you know, Pink Floyd and AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. So, yeah, but for me, I mean, it was Kiss up until Quiet Riot's Metal Health came out. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the first thing that kind of made me really interpret something else like Kiss.
With Kiss back then, they weren't just a rock band, but they were also tying themselves into everything else that we liked.
Right.
Like I said before, Kiss was like watching your superheroes that you would watch in Sunday morning cartoons all of a sudden yeah. came to life and started a rock band.
Yeah.
You know, with their costumes and makeup. And also at that time, we were watching, you know, Star Trek and Buck Rogers. And and what the same year I discovered Kiss was when Star Wars came out.
Right.
So Ace, with his whole space getup, you know, tied in really well with all the stuff in our pop culture that we as kids were getting into. And, you know, the advancement of computers and video games. I mean, right. it was all worked together, I think, to help them and their success, and especially appealing to us as kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
This is my friend's that died, and I got all his music. This was in his collection. This was when he was in elementary school. But when you're like, you know, like you were 4, I'm 7, 8 years old, and you're seeing this, I mean, that's just cool as hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to be this. You want to be like that, you know? It's right. like the closest thing to being able to be a superhero that you could be.
Absolutely.
Is to become like Ace Frehley.
Yeah, 100%. Quick shout out to Jeremy, who's in the chat. He's feeling under the weather. That's why he's not joining us tonight. But he did send a statement over. He sent this message. I saw Ace at Download a number of years ago. It was a short set, but quite a few Kiss numbers. Of course, I enjoyed it. I guess we'll never know if there was going to be a one-off reform of the band, as speculation was hinting at. Shame. None of us live forever. Do it today. Yeah, I saw Brad Dahl had a interesting take last night when this was first coming over. And your comment was, life is precious. If there's someone you've been thinking about, don't put off reaching out to them.
True. Yeah. 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 It's, I don't know. Yeah, as you get older, you start losing people, and you'd hate to think that somebody that you really care about, you didn't connect with them again before it was too late to do so.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, life is precious.
You know what else is really hurting is that he was about to be honored with KISS in December.
Right.
Oh.
At the Kennedy Center Awards. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, they released a statement actually regarding that, saying the same thing. It's a shame that he's not going to be around to see what they have lined up to celebrate his music and his life.
Yeah, that's going to hurt when that celebration happens, not having him there.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll have his costume or something. I don't know how the award show goes and what they would do to, you know, honor him during the event, but.
Well, they're going to have people playing their music. That's the usual MO. He'll be honored by whoever's playing their music. It'll be interesting to see who they bring in to do that.
So who do you think could do Ace Frehley solos the best? That thought just kind of hit me when you said that. Who would you pick to try to honor an Ace Frehley solo so that it sounds like Ace and not someone doing their own thing? Because it's,
and that's the thing, because one of the rumors initially was that it was going to be Ted Nugent.
Yeah, you would have to pick someone in that vein, yes.
But would Ted play Ace's stuff, or would Ted just be Ted?
Would be Ted.
He couldn't do that, so that would disqualify him. Maybe Jimmy Page.
Can Jimmy still play?
Those similar licks that Ace did in some of those tunes.
Yeah, there are rumors that Jimmy can't even play anymore.
So. Oh, really? I haven't heard that. That's too bad to hear. Yeah. Well, assuming he could play still. I think he'd be a good pick.
Oh, I mean, assuming he would play, I mean, Ace would be beside himself to know.
He sure would.
Yeah, his hero is playing, you know, because you have to think about it. His biggest influences are Page, Beck, Hendrix, and Clapton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
You can tell, too, with the way he plays.
Yeah.
That's why so many guitar players just couldn't do it, because they're too good. They're too technical and fast and precise, and you got to be able to dig into your soul to do what Ace is trying to bring through in a song.
Yeah, because Ace is more of a feel player than he is a technical player. That's why it would always crack me up when he would say, you know, had I practiced more.
Yeah.
You know. Had he practiced more, he wouldn't have had that same feel and intonation that he ultimately had. I'm assuming that, I don't know, do they get a full band to honor KISS? Do they do something like VH1 Rock Honors when they did God of Thunder? You know, it was Rob Zombie with Slash and Scott Ian and Gilby Clark and Tommy Lee on drums. You know, well, who can they get? John Five. John Five has played on Ace Frehley solo albums, and he adores the band. And even though he's technically proficient with all of his idols, he plays stuff the way that his idols played the stuff. So there's a candidate for you.
You know, this is not someone I would normally think of, but Slash would be good for that spot.
Yeah, and I've seen, I have to see if I can find the pictures. I got to see Ace at the Viper Room in LA with 200 people. And to the left of us was George Lopez, the comedian, and Slash at one of the booths. And Slash got up and played Cold Gin.
Nice.
Ace at the end of the night.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think who else was playing in Ace's band. Scott Coogan was playing in the band. Derek Hawkins, I think his name was, the other guitarist, guy with spiky blonde hair. And I don't remember who the bass player was. It was before Anthony Esposito joined him on the Anomaly Tour. Whoever the, because it was the first iteration of that band that he took out for Anomaly. I don't remember who the bass player was. I did exchange messages today with Mark Striegel, and I asked him for a quote that I could read. And he sent me the following. In a larger-than-life band of superheroes, Ace always seemed to be real, the most approachable. I met him numerous times through the years and had the honor and privilege of doing tons of interviews with him. You never know if he would be in a great mood or not so great mood, but you always knew he was real, not a faker. That came across in his playing and his songs, the absolute real deal. Pure rock and roll to the core, and one of my favorite rock stars of all time.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, with the whole talking metal connection, one of the reasons why John Astronomy, John Ostrowski, wasn't more involved with talking metal was because he became Ace's manager, personal assistant, and John is... I haven't spoken to John in years. You can
tell. I haven't heard from him in a long time either on social media even.
Yeah, he posted something on Instagram today and you can tell he's hurting. John, my heart goes out to you. If you ever get a chance to see this, know that you know your fans, people that followed you on Talking Metal and people that know that all that you've done for Ace over the years. Love you and, you know, encourage you in this difficult time, you know, for better or for worse. Ace was a part of his life for a better part of 40 years and more so these last, you know, 15 or so years where he's worked continuously with him. Mm-hmm. So it has to be really difficult for him and obviously Ace's family and all of us fans, you know, we all knew that one of the original four members of Kiss would eventually die, but I don't think anyone expected that Ace would have been the first, you know?
No, I was kind of thinking Peter. Well, yeah. I don't know if that's bad to say, but he always seemed to be the more frail dude.
Yeah. He's also the oldest, you know. This was obviously a freak accident. He fell in his studio, hit his head. And from what Jason Green mentioned on his show, which I was watching this morning, he mentioned that Ace had been in a coma for some time now. Mm-hmm. That those that were in the know knew that this wasn't how it was being played out in the media. And that makes sense. I mean, you hope for the best. You're not going to just go right out there and say, yeah, he's in a coma, got a brain bleed, and he's probably going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the family's hoping for the best. The doctors probably are as well. I mean, all of us, we wanted Ace to get better, you know. Mm-hmm. For as much as, you know, we've been critical about certain things that he's done, it doesn't diminish the love that we've had for him or his music. You know, no one's perfect, but.
So didn't you interview someone in the last few weeks and you all reminisced about him seeing Ace Frehley recently? And he was saying that Ace was not acting himself.
Oh, Josh Toomey.
Josh Toomey, yeah. He had seen him, and I recorded that interview at the end of May, actually, and it came out in August.
So it makes me wonder, you know, I almost hate to say something on video because you don't want people taking something you said, even if you're just wondering. But, of course, you know, I think I asked someone who was around him if they could tell if he was – had been drinking or something. And they said no, but still he was acting funny. So you almost wonder if he was on some kind of medication that was making him feel woozy. I kind of wasn't surprised when I heard he had that fall with the way some people said he'd been acting lately.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to be alcohol, or I think people would have caught on to that.
Yeah, I guess from what Jason Green was saying on his show is that Ace hasn't touched alcohol in years. So it's not that. And it could very well be medication because Ace has gotten larger these last few years. And that's usually Geezer Butler talks about that in his book, how some of the antidepressants that he's on ballooned him up in size and how, you know, it doesn't matter how much he's tried to work out or take other things to try to supplement that he had to kind of come to a fork in the road and say, either I'm going to get fit or, you know, I'm going to be fine in my head, basically, you know. So it could be that, mm-hmm. you know, until, and I know this from family members of mine, until you find the right mix or the right concoction of medication that you take, you know, there can be side effects and different things that come into play. Maybe that's mm-hmm. why, you know, that his behavior, you know, during that show that Josh saw, and maybe that's what, like you're saying, maybe that's what happened in the studio. Maybe there's something that he was taking for health reasons that, you know, just he couldn't stay balanced or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, even some of those like nerve pain medicines can make you feel woozy and a little dizzy and put on lots of weight and all that stuff too. Yeah. That actually happened to me once. I was taking a medicine called Lyrica many years ago. That they give for people with fibromyalgia and stuff. And believe it or not, I was twice this size by the time I stopped taking it, almost. I'm like 140 pounds. I got up to 220 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And was buying size 36 jeans and stuff, and I quit taking that medicine, and it came off so fast that people were worried something was wrong with me and that I was sick and dying. But so, yeah, that can happen. And two, those nerve medicines, you know, they freeze you a bit.
Right.
You can easily fall if you're not careful. So, yeah, I wonder if it was something a little bit more on top of just getting older, which, of course, you know, when you get old and you fall, it's a lot easier to break stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Ace was 74. Let's not kid ourselves. Ace lived a hard life. Did a lot of alcohol and drugs for a very long time. I mean, if all accounts are true, I mean, he was heavy into both from the late 70s all the way up to, when did Anomaly come out? 2009. So like up to 16 years ago. So that's a stretch of 30 some odd years of alcohol and drugs possibly taking a toll on him. Similar to Ozzy, you know, it's kind of the same thing. They abuse substances for so long that has to have an effect on you. But again, he was able to live a good life. I mentioned this.
He did.
Hooligan Nation asked me to send a quote about Ace. And one of the things that I brought up, I said, remember the lyrics to the song Insane. And during that song, during the chorus, he says, I live 5 days to year one.
Yeah.
And I think when he wrote that lyric, he really meant that.
Yeah, he did.
So the partying and everything else that he was doing.
He had a good time.
He had a good time. So for as sad as this coming to an abrupt end that no one saw it coming because of it was an accident. Ace lived a great life.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's some similarities too, I think, between him and Ozzy.
Right.
They were both characters unto themselves, different than all the other characters in the heavy music world.
Right.
They were still, they were very unique in their personalities. You know, they're the kind of guys that walk into the room and everybody wants to be around them and talk to them, and they're fun. And another thing too is Ace's voice is different. You know, it really stands out amongst the other voices in Kiss in a big way. Yeah, there it is. So when you hear his tracks, I mean, they're so recognizable that it's almost like, you know, an Ace solo track to me. Just, yeah, the personalities that we've lost this year are just, you know, on a different level than a lot of the others that we have to deal with or lose, like you said. You know, I think Jeremy's right when he said Pete Way fell when he died too, didn't he? Yeah. But anyway, when I think of Ace compared to the other characters, those qualities stand out with him that really separated him as even a different character from the rest of the guys in Kiss.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons why he was able to have the solo career that he did too. If anybody was going to have a successful one, I think it was him because of his voice and his personality.
And also, I think today, one of the things that stood out to me also is his work ethic, because, you know, a lot of people said that he was lazy, like he was the lazy guy in Kiss. But he put out, if I'm not mistaken, 9 solo albums. He played on 9 Kiss albums and he put out 9 solo albums. He put out Fraley's Comet, Second Sighting, Trouble Walking, Anomaly, Space Invader. I'm missing some stuff here. He put out the Origins albums. He was working on a 3rd Origins album. So, I mean, yeah, what I'm trying to get at is Peter's put out how many solo albums? I mean, 4 or 5, if that. There's the 2 in the 80s. There's the Chris Catt one, which is the only like rock one. And then there's that like jazz album he put out. So there's like 4. Bruce Kulick has released
3, 4
maybe. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Vinnie Vincent, 2. You know, officially, even though there's bootlegs and EPs and stuff like that. Eric Carr unfortunately passed away, and there's only 1 with his work. Mark St. John had the White Tiger stuff, and that's about it. And let's look at the solo output from the rest of the members. I mean, Gene and Paul have only put out, Gene has put out 1. Paul's put out 1 also. Eric Singer's put 1 out. Granted, they've had the vehicle of Kiss to release all the stuff that they've wanted. Actually, Paul's actually released the Soul Station album as well, but those are technically covers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you look at it from that standpoint, Ace has been more proficient.
Yeah, he has.
With his releases. And with this deal that he's had, he's been, you know, releasing an album of original music every 2 years, and he's been doing the Origins albums in between.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been out there playing also.
Yeah, he's been playing a lot.
So, Brad.
Yeah, Ed.
I don't know if you've told me before on this show, but what was your discovery of Kiss yourself? At what age and what year and all that stuff? And how?
Excellent question. Ed, so in 1974, that's when I started high school, and I was on the cross country team. I know, hard to believe, but it's true. And
you have pictures of that?
Yeah, I do. I do. Not handy, but I'll get the evidence for you. but there's a group of guys that were on the team that were really into music. And of course I was, I was still developing my musical snobbery. And so they would give me albums to listen to. And one album they gave me, this is again, 1974.
It's gotta be the first one.
Yeah. They gave me this one. And I knew nothing about this band. I mean, yeah, you look at the picture.
Yeah.
What is this? And I remember dropping the needle on this and just going, Strutter.
Yeah.
And there was just something about it. It's like, wow, this is really cool. These songs are really cool. And, knew nothing else about the band. They also gave me, of course, this one too, because it came out in 74.
Right.
And I thought the album cover was just weird as hell, as not just hotter than hell. It's like, what is this? What are these guys,
Yeah.
Are these guys Asian? I don't know. hard to tell with all the makeup. I started playing bass in 75. I got my first bass in 1975 on my birthday. Okay. And one of the first things I did was this. And of course it drove me crazy when I first started playing it, because I'm like, God, these songs are like in weird places on the neck. It doesn't make any sense the way they wrote this. And then I figured it out that they tuned down a half step.
Okay.
Which I've never seen anybody in the band talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to guess that it was Ace that had everything to do with them tuning down a half step, because a lot of people call that Jimi Hendrix tuning.
Okay.
It's like, is Jimmy tuned down a half step? I've never done the dive on that to prove that or not, but I've heard a lot of people call that. Oh, I do Hendrix tuning down a half step. And we know that Ace, Jimmy was his guy. So it kind of makes sense that he would have come in there saying, hey, guys, I think we need Victor to do the impression here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Curly.
We need to tune this down a half step.
And we need to go half step down.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's easy to sing, too. Maybe Paul can sing it.
So the first band I was in, 1976, we played a lot of Kiss songs. And I made the guitar player learn the leads, because without them being played like they are on the album,
the song
just didn't, it wasn't the same. It just didn't work. And I think this speaks to Ace's talent. I don't know when they first recorded these things, whether, how they did this in the studio, did Ace sit down and really work on what he was going to play, or was this off the cuff and it was just so good that, of course, he played it just like the album.
Yeah.
He still played it like the album, even now. I mean, and which, like I said, you got to, without those leads like that. I don't know. And I just got to give him credit for that. I think his leads, they're just tremendous. They're just really just fun to listen to.
They're memorable.
There's only a handful of guitar players out there that their leads are that important to the song that you really need them there, or the song just isn't going to work.
So did you see them on one of those 70s tours?
I saw them. Let's see. It was right after Kiss Alive came out.
Yeah.
And they must. I saw them at the San Diego Sports Arena, because they sold out in L.A. I lived in the Los Angeles area. They sold out in L.A. like immediately when the tickets went on sale. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get tickets for the show in San Diego. I was only 15.
Yeah.
And luckily, my brother, CEO Dave, being back then, we didn't have the best relationship. He was still beating the crap out of me, but he was cool. He was cool enough to get his buddies together and include me to go to this concert. It was the second concert I ever went to. So we, you know, drove down to San Diego. It was a cool road trip. And it was just like the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, we're sitting in the back of the arena in the loge level, you know, which is not on the floor. It's just up one, you know. So yeah, we're looking straight ahead at the stage. And when the lights went out for Kiss, oh, it was Montrose was the warm-up act. And they were good, but it was, you know, it's like everybody's there to see Kiss.
Yeah.
When the lights went out, the sound in the place just went up so loud. I mean, like, again, only my second concert, but I was like, wow, is this what concerts are supposed to be like? When they started playing, they opened with Deuce, of course, they did the whole Kiss Alive thing. When they started playing, you couldn't hear them because the crowd was so loud.
Wow.
It was nuts. I've never been to a concert like that since.
That's awesome.
The audience was so loud, you couldn't hear the band.
And that's probably the ultimate tour. You could have seen them, I'm thinking.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like because everything was about to change at that point, you know, right, for them musically and also the band-wise. And we've talked about this with other bands that once they get successful, you know, how they fought so hard together to get there, then things kind of start to maybe crack a little bit amongst the guys. Cause it's, you know, it's like, we don't have to fight together anymore to make it. We've made it.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And yeah. And another thing about Kiss, and I've said this many times before, of all the musicians that I've talked to and interviewed and asked them about how they, you know, what put them on the road with rock music. And you get guys that are older than me, you know, 70 and whatever. And a lot of them will cite the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. It's like, yeah, when I saw that, I knew I wanted to be a musician. Well, my age, 65 and lower, is Kiss. I'm going to say at least 90% of the people I've talked to that are musicians, they're like, yeah, it's Kiss is what got me wanting to play guitar. And Ace Frehley was the big influence as far as guitar playing goes. I mean, for me, it was Gene Simmons. I mean, if I cite my greatest bass influences as far as my playing goes, well, I have to say Gene Simmons is right there. And
that's cool. Yeah,
Kiss just had still such a huge impact in rock music. It's hard to find anybody out there in rock music, any heavy metal or anything like that, that hasn't been influenced by Kiss.
It's funny when you say that too, to think about how they spent all those years. Like if you go read history books on the first few years they were trying to make it, like up until Alive, they were struggling. And
Alive's what basically saved them, or they would have died in the record company.
And then they kind of started to take off. And that got me thinking today, you know, like when was the earliest point that I ever heard of Kiss as a kid? And, you know, I told you that I went to Christian school, but that was after the fact. First, second, third grade, which would have been the mid 70s, I'm going to public school and I can't remember one single kid ever talking about Kiss. I'd never heard of them. until third grade. In third grade, I had a friend down the street and I would go to his house. I've told you this story before. He had one of those big furniture record players in his room.
Oh, yeah.
And he had Live too. And his mom was cool. She let us put it on and turn it to 11. And I instantly became obsessed listening to that. And I also remember being really excited about the song Shock Me and the guitar solo. Like I said, this is what kind of woke me up to rock music. But, you know,
you remember, you know, what a big deal it was when that album came out and that Ace is actually singing a song.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was
huge. I didn't know anything about that, but looking back on it now. But the only other, because, you know, it was people, younger kids just don't get how little our sources of information were back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously teenagers back then knew who Kiss were, but their only medium for that would have probably been magazines and, right. and maybe a radio station if you're in a big city. Like, I can't remember Lexington playing Kiss songs on the radio much.
I don't remember hearing Kiss on the radio either.
The only other time I remember it, because I'd learned about Kiss and then Star Wars came out. So then when I would go to the grocery store and I'm looking at Star Wars cards, well, there started to be Kiss cards next to them.
Right.
So I was learning about Kiss from my friend and I see the Kiss cards there. And so I started buying those with, I don't know how I got them, if my mom bought them for me, if I had some money to buy them myself. But, you know, if it wasn't for like my friend down the street, I can't think of when I would have ever had known about Kiss until they had done all that extra marketing, like with the cards and, you know, all the toys and things they started to make after that. So, yeah, it's the way they evolved in the 70s is a very interesting story.
Yeah. So I see Jeremy, I don't know, we should probably address this. Jeremy wants to know what we think was best, Ace's best work, Kiss or solo? I'll go first, Kiss. Although I did like his solo stuff a lot. I have all his albums. I've bought them all. But then.
Yeah, Kiss for me too.
I mean, and he, it's not like he had a huge input. I mean, the first album, I think the only song that was really his was Cold Gin, which one of my all-time mm-hmm. favorite Kiss songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then after that, I mean, if you look at the rest of the discography, I mean, Parasite is his, Strange Parasite. Ways yep. is yep. Getaway is his.
Oh, yeah, Getaway's a totally underrated song. I don't know. That, you know, I think he did the intro to Rock Bottom. I don't think he wrote the right. song. Yeah,
he's got credits on that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And Flaming Youth, Victor, I he's got a credit on there. I bet he wrote the main riff and
probably
the chorus part, which is, God, that's a fun song to play. Fun song.
Yeah, it's a shame they only played it really on that tour, on the Destroyer tour.
Yeah, and they didn't play it when I saw them on that tour. I saw them at the Anaheim Stadium, and they did not play that.
It's on, you can find
it's on something. There's a
lot. And on the one of the Destroyer reissues where they have a show from Amsterdam, I believe.
Ah.
They're playing it on there.
Cool.
Jeremy also says, do you think they were ever going to reform?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they would have. There's just too much that went on. There's behind the scenes stuff that I've heard that I can't mention. And there's also the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing. I think it really bothered Ace and Peter that there was no way that they were able to get up there and play that.
That was a total missed opportunity. And Paul and Gene. They should feel bad about that not happening for the fans.
Well,
I mean, they should have done it for the fans.
The other thing, too, is that there was talk about them inviting him to this whole Vegas thing.
Right.
And he said in an interview recently, you know, the place where they should have invited us was that those final shows in New York at the end of the road tour, not for this. And he said, you know, the Garden holds 19,000 people, where they're playing in Vegas holds 5. You know, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. So I think they dropped the ball with both of those things because I think us as fans were thinking, okay, the end of the road is going to have this ultimate show where we're going to get Ace, we're going to get Peter, we're going to get Bruce. We may even get Vinny up there for a song. You know, it seemed like the end of that really should have been a celebration of every era of the band, where it should have had all of these different members chiming in and celebrating their portion of their legacy. Because let's be honest, they They're part of the legacy that is Kiss. So I don't think they would have ever gotten back together again. I think there was just too much stuff. They would have had to fork over a boatload of money. I mean, it would have been in the millions. It would have been probably double digit millions for Ace to come back on board. I think at this point it would have strictly had to have been a cash exchange, but unfortunately it never happened.
Too bad.
Euro Lamb forever.
Yeah. Who's Euro?
I don't know. That's
somebody from Greece.
is saying Ace and Peter both underutilized vocally. Peter also had a great voice.
He did. He does have a great voice, yeah.
Yeah.
Peter had the sexy voice.
His singing on Black Diamond, oh my gosh, I love that so much.
Yeah, there's so much of that early era stuff that, and you were able to see them live, but just checking out like the Winterland footage when the band was a hungry band out to prove themselves, and the four of them. I mean, they were a unit. They were out there to annihilate the audience.
Yeah.
It's just spectacular. As you were saying before, Brad, you know, his solos, just how everything cohesively worked. And after seeing the Becoming Led Zeppelin documentary, we can't really poo-poo on Kiss anymore for having all these behind the scenes musicians, because apparently Jimmy Page has played on a million and one things in the studio even after Led Zeppelin became popular, because whoever the guitarist was, he was brought in because the producer knew that he was a sure thing. So it's unfortunate that we couldn't get one last hurrah out of the original four.
I agree.
But and there are people criticizing Paul today, for example, with his message, what he posted. It's a picture of him and Ace laughing, and he says something to the extent of, in 1974, they were staying at the Wyatt Hotel on Sunset, and he heard a guitarist blazing in the next room over, and he went out to the balcony, looked over, or he thought to himself, I want a guitarist like that in my band. He went out on the balcony, looked over, and saw that it was Ace playing, and he said, great, oh my God, you know, I do have that guitarist in my band. So a lot of people have kind of come out at Paul saying, you know, kind of criticizing that that's the only thing he could have said. He released a joint statement with Gene as, you know, under the Kiss moniker, under the Kiss brand. I do honestly think that that message is more of him being in shock than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this has probably caught them off guard as well, because as we're saying, I think that all of a sudden they've realized, oh shit, this is never going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that they held out hope, as what Jeremy said and what we've discussed. I think that they felt that there was going to come a time and place that, you know, that, that they were going to make a deal that they could never refuse, and they would get the four back together again. And there would be that toxic mix again from all four components, not just one person. It would be all four of them. And I think that they've realized there's finality to this. There is no next chance. It's done. So I think now is when you may see them lament some of their decisions. They may not say it publicly, but I think the telling sign is going to be this, you know, thing at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
Do some of them not show up as a result? Because this has been, you know, such a big hit to them? Do they realize all of a sudden, shit, you know, I should have addressed this a different way when he was still alive. We could have, we should have done this for the fans.
Yep.
You know, that's
it's depressing.
it is, because it's definitely a lost opportunity. And I think they're going to feel it more than anyone else. All right, Jeremy saying he will be immortalized though with the plan for a ABBA style hologram show. Is that still the plan? Yes, because they've sold their music, their image, everything to the organization that owns all the ABBA stuff. So it's going to be that same sort of thing. They're going to create the avatars. The rumor is that they're going to build a theater in Las Vegas to put on the Kiss shows. And if planned correctly, they're going to get a lot of money out of that. And they're going to, I mean, if they pull it off the right way, that could last a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have to make sure that it's inclusive for everybody, though. That's the thing. The one thing that they've been smart with doing, and I'll continue to say this, when people doubt, oh, you know, the Kiss having more streams than Def Leppard is bullshit because Def Leppard sold more albums and this and that. Right. But what has Def Leppard done to ingrain themselves with the younger audience? See, that's the thing that Kiss has always been smart with. As far as, you know, us as adults looking at, you know, them doing the Hello Kitty stuff or doing the Scooby-Doo stuff, for a lot of older people thinking that's nonsense, you know, they need to do this or they need to do the other thing. I was watching Scooby-Doo with my kids and realizing that they were listening to the songs as a result of them watching these Scooby-Doo cartoons with Kiss. I Was Made for Loving You is their biggest song on streaming. It was in the Fall Guy movie. It was in that movie constantly. There were instrumental versions of it. There was a version of a woman singing it. There was the band singing it. So if nothing else, there should be classes in college for people that want to market bands, studying Kiss, studying merchandise, because I can't tell you how many bands have come out and criticized them and then done all the same things. Yes, Motley Crue. Yes, Aerosmith, et cetera, et cetera. So many bands that criticize them for meet and greets. So many bands that criticize them for different types of merchandise. They all followed in the footsteps. So this whole ABBA type show is seem like something ridiculous to a lot of people. And I think, again, had they have done a show that included all of the former members for the end of the road and then tacked that onto the end, I think the internet community would have digested that in a different fashion. There wouldn't have been such a harsh remark. And that was, or such a harsh response. I think that that was due to the fact that people held out hope for that last night to have Ace, Peter, and at least Bruce.
It would have been cool.
And they would have made money hand over fist because they could have released whatever they wanted from that. They could have released DVDs. It could have been on Netflix. It could have been on a million things, and people would have signed up for it. Mm-hmm. Because KISS fans are collectors. KISS fans are our age, have disposable income, and a lot of people are still waiting for that DVD from Dubai that spent a ton of money on that, and they will never see it. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that they would have released an end of the road DVD and people wouldn't have gone apeshit over that and wouldn't have purchased, you know, especially having all of these people returning. They would have done gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see. Ace was working on Origins 3. He supposedly had some music, some demos that he was going to work with Steve Brown on, apparently, afterwards. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I mean, I don't know if there are stems out there somewhere, if there's, I mean, Ace has got a million demos. I'll tell you right now, if they start releasing demos and unreleased stuff similar to that Origins Volume 1 with, you know, certain things, KISS fans are going to buy it.
Oh, heck yeah.
You know,
yeah, you got to wonder, because I mean, if Steve Brown is still his right hand guy, he's probably got access to all of this stuff. And I don't know what the legalities are of everything, but I mean, obviously he has the power and connections to complete all of that, and have, so you could get a lot of people guesting on it, and you could probably put out a pretty cool album.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that is something he can actually do legally.
Right. Legal side of it is what's really going to dictate what happens, because I mean, Ace for years had talked about releasing The Elder with his original solos and with his original guitar playing on there. And that never happened. And I mean, unless Mercury allows that to happen, or whoever owns Mercury now allows that to happen. I mean, I don't see that Steve Brown is going to have the pull to release that stuff.
Hmm.
You know, that's probably more of the band. And we don't know. I mean, would the band release a deluxe edition of The Elder to include that sort of stuff?
No.
I think that that's, well, I don't think that's the last album that they would release a deluxe version of, but it's one of the last few that they would do it to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, let's see. They've skipped over Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, right? They haven't.
They did a deluxe Love Gun.
They did a deluxe Love Gun. Okay. Yeah. But not Rock and Roll Over, right?
No, nope. No Rock and Roll Over. So they've done deluxe editions of, and I'm going off the top of my head, so if I'm missing anything, I apologize, but they've done Destroyer more than once.
Oh, yeah.
Love Gun. Creatures,
mm-hmm.
The Alive albums, and I don't think that they've done deluxe editions of anything else. And for example, with Creatures, there were demos that were more lick it up demos. So I think they just wanted to encapsulate anything remotely pertaining to Vinny with Creatures, for example. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They've been doing these soundboard releases. But I mean, honestly, I would almost prefer a box set that has, okay, we're going to give you all of the stuff that we played on the Destroyer tour that doesn't appear on any other live album. We're going to give you all of the, you know, Rock and Roll Over stuff. You know,
yeah.
I'd prefer a box set that has you know, all of this stuff that they've released, you know, if you want to include Alive, Alive 1, Alive 3, fine. But then give me another two discs that have all of the missing pieces, all of the other stuff. If you want to include a live album from each lineup, okay, fine. But do it all in one package.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I've said this a bunch of times. I've mentioned this with to Mark Striegel before. We've talked about it a bunch. We're at the age where all of our heroes are slowly going to go away. For a lot of us, you know, that kind of started with Ronnie James Dio, continued with Lemmy, Eddie Van Halen, Chuck Schuldiner. We've had, you know, recent losses of Paul Di'Anno, John Sykes, Ozzy Osbourne. Obviously, Randy Rhoads died way back when. You've had Kevin Dubrow. You've had Frankie Benali.
Cliff Burton.
Cliff Burton. There's another one. There's a lot of people, you know, that have... are intricate parts of the soundtrack of our lives that are no longer with us. And we reach that finality. And
you say Neil Peart?
Neil Peart? I did not say. There's another one.
Yeah.
Can't forget Neil.
We still have Willie Nelson. Dolly Parton.
Are we sure?
And they're still going. Yeah. Well, yeah, are we sure?
Dolly has said she's got some health issues.
Yeah, she's having a hard time.
She ain't dead yet.
Every once in a while, I'll hear that Willie Nelson's having a hard time, but I never can tell if it's just fake news or the truth.
Yeah. Well, how much money does Willie have? I mean,
I don't think he thinks about money anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah. And that's another thing too. You think about like members of Metallica, for example, with all the stuff, with all the substance abuse they've done and hard living and stuff like that. But they've got so much money that I have to think that Metallica is an organization where they've got doctors, they've got masseuses, they've got, like when they're out on tour, they've got their whole enterprise following them around and making sure that the money's still coming in.
That's right. It makes sense too. Yeah. I mean, that's part of your business, man. Yeah,
you got absolutely.
They got to stay in shape to do it. And that takes a lot of time when you get older.
And that's interesting because the Metallica guys are kind of in between. They're like 10 years older, at least 10 years older than me. They're in their 60s.
I guess that's about right. Yeah.
The Stones, that's another example.
The Stones will never die, I don't think.
The Stones will be the first human beings to reach 150 years old.
That will be an amazing day, though, when Keith Richards dies, because we've all been telling so many jokes for decades now about how long he's going to be around.
Oh, absolutely. Dennis,
it'll be hard to believe, that he's really gone.
There's the Dennis Leary joke of Keith Richards that he told back in the 90s where Keith Richards started doing the stop doing drugs PSAs. And and Dennis Leary says, the kids can't do drugs, Keith. You've already done them all. They're going to have to wait until you die and they burn your ashes so that they can get high off of your ashes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I think Jeremy's got a good point that fortunately the music never dies. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And thank goodness for that. And the sad thing is we're probably going to be doing a few more of these type of shows here in the next year or two.
I sure am glad that we have each other to talk to, though.
Yeah.
Especially with a lot of my music buddies being gone too.
Exactly.
I mean, they're up there hanging out with Ace now. I'm down here trying to console my mopey feelings, having lost him.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think what we do here on the show is therapeutic for us and for a lot of other people. That's why we encourage other people to join us in the chat during the shows or joining us on Patreon. Before we wrap up the show, I do want to remind you guys about the Halloween show. Yes, Brad, you did come up with this idea, whether you remember it or not.
Oh, yeah, I got 5 days to come up with my list. Holy crap, I better get that done. Quick question about Halloween. Are we ranking them or just giving you a list of 10 and then you're going to...
It's the same as usual, Brad. We don't
change. 1 to 10.
One to 10.
I can do that.
Bands you most associate with Halloween, whether it's imagery, whether it's lyrics, whether it's...
So, album Edgar, I'm going to challenge you to come up with a top 10 list and of your Halloween bands and submit it to Victor. And we'll see about the Jays. How do you even know about the Jays over there? Nobody knows about baseball in the UK, do they?
Well, they are Canadian. They may feel that they're still part of the
UK.
Yeah.
They got a whole country behind them. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right, guys. Join us on the next one and get the Halloween thing together.
Give me your 10 bands you most associate with Halloween, spookiest bands.
Euro, Lamb Euro, whoever you are. Thanks. Give us your list too. Join the party.
Send your list to signalsfrommars@signalsfrommars.com. Or if you usually exchange messages with me on any of these social media platforms, do so that way. One parting word from Ace.
Look, it's rock and roll.
Not the rock and roll, as Jeremy said, it will live on forever. Thank you, Ace. Thank you guys for joining me tonight. Brad, Ed, Edgar, Jeremy, Tony. Euro Lamb forever. As Brad shows off his effects. Thank you guys once again, and we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.